Welcome to your WJUA Level Physical Education Study podcast. I'm your tutor for today, and we're diving deep into one of the most important topics in your specification, the musculoskeletal system analysis. That's topic 2.1. Whether you're revising for your written exam or just trying to get your head around planes, axes, and muscle contractions, you're in exactly the right place. Grab a pen because we're going to cover everything you need to earn marks in the exam. Let's get started. So let's begin with the big picture. The musculoskeletal system is essentially the framework that makes all human movement possible. In your WJEAC A-level exam, you won't just be asked to name muscles or bones, you'll be expected to analyze movement in a sporting context, explaining exactly what's happening at each joint, which muscles are working, how they're contracting, and in which plane and around which axis the movement is occurring. This is a high-demand topic, and it appears across multiple assessment objectives: AO1 for knowledge, AO2 for application, and AO3 for analysis. So getting this right is absolutely worth your time. Let's start with the foundations, the skeleton and joint types. The skeleton provides the levers that muscles pull on to create movement. At A level, you need to know the specific articulating bones at key joints. And here's your first examiner tip. Never say the leg bones. Always name them. At the knee, that's the femur and the tibia. At the hip, the femur and the acetabulum of the pelvis. At the shoulder, the humerus and the glenoid fossa of the scapula. Examiners award marks for precise anatomical terminology, and vague answers will cost you. Now, joints. The most important joint type for movement analysis is the synovial joint, and within that category, the most common in sport are the ball and socket joint, like the hip and shoulder, which allows movement in all three planes, and the hinge joint, like the knee and elbow, which primarily allows movement in the sagittal plane. You also need to know the pivot joint, like the atlantoaxial joint in the neck, which allows rotation. Right, let's move on to movement terminology. This is where a lot of candidates lose marks by being imprecise. You must always specify the joint when describing a movement. It's not enough to say flexion. You must say flexion at the knee joint or extension at the hip joint. The key movements you need to know are flexion, which is a decrease in the angle at a joint, extension, an increase in the angle, abduction, movement away from the midline of the body, adduction, movement towards the midline, rotation, turning around the longitudinal axis, and circumduction, a combination of all these movements in a circular pattern. For the shoulder and hip, you also need to know horizontal flexion and extension, medial and lateral rotation, and for the ankle, dorsiflexion and plantar flexion. Now here's a really important concept: planes of movement and axes of rotation. These always come as a pair, and WJE examiners are very specific about the correct pairings. Learn these as absolute rules. The sagittal plane divides the body into left and right halves. Movement in this plane, like a forward kick or a bicep curl, occurs around the transverse axis, which runs horizontally from side to side. The frontal plane, sometimes called the coronal plane, divides the body into front and back. Movement in this plane, like a star jump or a cartwheel, occurs around the sagittal axis, which runs horizontally from front to back. The transverse plane divides the body into upper and lower halves. Movement in this plane, like a golf swing or a pirouette in dance, occurs around the longitudinal axis, which runs vertically from head to toe. A really common mistake in the exam is pairing the frontal plane with the transverse axis. That's wrong. Remember, frontal goes with sagittal axis. I use the memory hook front to back for frontal. The sagittal axis goes front to back, just like the frontal plane divides front from back. Once that clicks, you won't mix them up again. Now let's talk about muscles. At A level, you need to know the major muscle groups and their roles in specific movements. The key muscles you'll encounter most frequently include the quadriceps group at the front of the thigh, responsible for knee extension, the hamstring group at the back of the thigh, responsible for knee flexion and hip extension, the gluteus maximus, the large buttock muscle, responsible for hip extension and lateral rotation, the gastrocnemius and soleus in the calf, responsible for plantar flexion at the ankle, the deltoid at the shoulder, responsible for abduction, the pectoralis major for horizontal flexion and adduction at the shoulder, the latissimus dorsi for shoulder extension and adduction, and the biceps brachii and triceps brachii for elbow flexion and extension, respectively. Important: always use the full anatomical name. Quads and hamstrings are colloquial terms. Write quadriceps or hamstring group in your exam answers. Now, muscle roles, the agonist is the prime mover, the muscle primarily responsible for the movement. The antagonist is the opposing muscle that relaxes to allow the movement. The synergist assists the agonist, and the fixator stabilizes the origin of the agonist so it can work effectively. In an exam question asking you to analyze a movement, you'll typically be asked to identify the agonist and its type of contraction. Make sure you give both. Which brings us to types of muscle contraction, a topic that trips up a huge number of candidates. There are three types. Concentric contraction. The muscle shortens as it develops tension. This happens during the power phase of a movement, for example, the quadriceps contracting concentrically during the upward phase of a squat, or the hamstring group contracting concentrically during the pull-through phase of a sprint. Eccentric contraction. The muscle lengthens under tension. This is the braking or control phase, for example, the quadriceps contracting eccentrically during the lowering phase of a squat to control the descent against gravity. And isometric contraction. The muscle develops tension, but there is no change in length. For example, the core muscles during a plank or the shoulder stabilizers during a static hold in gymnastics. The most common error here is confusing the preparation phase with the execution phase. In a kicking action during the backswing, the preparation phase, the quadriceps are actually contracting eccentrically as the knee flexes. Then during the forward kick, the execution phase, the quadriceps contract concentrically to extend the knee. Candidates who don't think carefully about the direction of gravity and the direction of muscle pull will get this wrong. My advice? Always draw a quick arrow showing the direction of gravity on your exam paper before you start analyzing. Now let's look at lever systems. A lever system consists of three components: the fulcrum, which is the joint, the effort, which is the muscle force, and the load, which is the weight being moved. There are three classes of lever. In a class 1 lever, the fulcrum is between the effort and the load, like a seesaw. The atlanto-occipital joint in the neck is a class 1 lever. In a class 2 lever, the load is between the fulcrum and the effort, like a wheelbarrow. The ankle joint during a calf raise is a class 2 lever, providing a mechanical advantage. In a class 3 lever, the effort is between the fulcrum and the load, like a pair of tweezers. The elbow joint during a bicep curl is a class 3 lever. Class 3 levers are the most common in the human body. They operate at a mechanical disadvantage, meaning the effort required is greater than the load, but they allow for a greater range of movement and speed, which is why they're so prevalent in sport. In exam questions about lever systems, you'll often be asked to state the mechanical advantage or disadvantage. For class 2 levers, state that there is a mechanical advantage because the load arm is shorter than the effort arm. For class 3 levers, state there is a mechanical disadvantage because the effort arm is shorter than the load arm, but this allows for greater speed and range of movement. Right, let's move into exam tips and common mistakes. Here are the big ones. Number 1, always specify the joint. Never write flexion occurs. Always write flexion occurs at the knee joint. This is a mark-winning habit. Number 2, use the correct plane axis pairing. Sagittal with transverse, frontal with sagittal, transverse with longitudinal. Learn these as immutable facts. Number 3, identify the type of contraction correctly. Ask yourself, is the muscle shortening or lengthening? Is it working with gravity or against it? If the muscle is lengthening under load, controlling a movement against gravity, it's eccentric. Number 4, use anatomical terminology throughout. Quadriceps, not quads. Hamstring group, not hamstrings. Gastrocnemius, not calf muscle. Examiners are specifically instructed to award marks for precise terminology and to withhold marks for colloquial terms. Number 5, structure your movement analysis answers using the JMMASP framework. That stands for joint, movement, muscles, action type, contraction type, plane, and axis. Work through each element in order and you won't miss a mark point. Now, a quick fire recall quiz. I'll ask a question, pause, and then give you the answer. Try to answer before I do. Question 1. What type of contraction occurs in the hamstring group during the lowering phase of a deadlift? Pause. The answer is eccentric. The hamstring group lengthens under tension to control the descent against gravity. Question 2. In which plane and around which axis does a cartwheel occur? Pause. A cartwheel occurs in the frontal plane around the sagittal axis. Question 3. Name the three components of a lever system. Pause, fulcrum, effort, and load. Question 4. What class of lever is the elbow joint during a bicep curl, and what is its mechanical implication? Pause. It is a Class 3 lever, operating at a mechanical disadvantage, but allowing for greater speed and range of movement. Question 5. What is the antagonist muscle during knee extension? Pause. The hamstring group. How did you do? If you got all 5, you're in great shape. If not, go back and review the sections where you stumbled. Let's wrap up with a quick summary of everything we've covered today. The musculoskeletal system analysis topic requires you to identify articulating bones precisely, describe joint types and the movements they allow, correctly pair planes of movement with their axes of rotation, identify agonist and antagonist muscles using full anatomical names, determine the type of muscle contraction by considering the direction of gravity and muscle pull, and analyze lever systems in sporting contexts, stating mechanical advantage or disadvantage. The golden rule for this topic is precision. Every mark in this section is won through specific, accurate, anatomically correct language. Vague answers earn no marks. Specific, well-structured answers earn full marks. Use the JMMACP framework for movement analysis questions. Remember the immutable plane axis pairings. And always, always specify the joint. You've got this. Keep revising, keep practicing movement analysis on real sporting examples, and you'll be well prepared for whatever WJHE puts in front of you. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode.